Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Lions Watch, your one-stop shop for all things England. I'm Marcus Speller.
And I'm Luke Moore.
After UEFA's announcement that countries will be able to take a 26-strong squad to the Euros, this week we're asking which fringe players could capitalise. And while Phil Foden continues to sparkle at Manchester City, we look at just how important he could be for England. Plus, we take you back to those halcyon 67 days under Big Sam and the start of a brave new world under Gareth Southgate.
Well, that was the worst performance I've ever seen from an England team, ever. We were totally hopeless for 90 minutes.
It's another wretched night for England at a major tournament.
And did you also miss a left-footed player down the left side?
Yeah, but where is that player?
How are we going to win this tournament as England?
And England win on penalties!
Well, hello, everybody.
Hello, it's only me here.
It is. But I like to think that there are people listening.
Yeah, they are, hopefully. Yeah, fingers crossed.
Luke, we put out our 23-man squad for the Euros a number of weeks ago on Twitter, and we got some backlash, as you'd expect, because it's difficult to keep everybody happy and to put everybody in.
Because 18 of them are right backs.
Yes.
And we just think that's a very specialised position. And it's got to be looked after and respected.
We can fit in three more right backs now because, because we have a 26 player squad to go on for the European Championships. We must remind ourselves that all the other teams get that as well.
Well, I was about to say, I mean, my roller coaster of emotions when I saw that news did go pretty much as you'd expect. Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
Great news for us, that.
Mm.
And then you think of, say, France.
Yeah.
And all the players that don't get anywhere near their team.
Uh-huh.
Upamecano, for example, three caps.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's amazing,
well,
really.
Well, the decision was taken by UEFA's National Teams Committee to mitigate the impact of the condensed season and if any COVID outbreaks occur during the tournament, of course. So pretty
I think it's a sensible thing to do, given the, not only that, but the truncation of the season itself as well. I mean, you said the condensed season, the COVID outbreaks. For me, yeah, the condensing of the season has been a really difficult one for everyone. And given that now in tournaments, it never used to be this. I'm sure you remember, it used to be a case that you would have your squad that would travel and you'd name your first 11, you'd name your three subs. Mm. And the other players in the squad knew they wouldn't ever be able to feature in that game.
Oh, that was a while ago. Yeah.
It was, but it used to be the case. And now it's obviously you can pick whoever you want from the older squad, can't you, every game. Mm-hmm. So to have more options is obviously a great thing.
If you're on, you know how they have a standby list normally? If you're on the standby list and it's a 26-man squad, you say, oh, piss off. Just let me have a holiday.
Yeah.
Look, I'm either in or I'm out.
Trevor Sinclair talked quite eloquently about that. I remember he said that he was on the standby list initially for, I think it's Japan, South Korea, 2002.
Well, he went there, didn't he?
He did, but he went there with them on standby to do the training camp and everything.
I mean, that's bold going all that way.
Then he flew home, and on the way home, the news broke, he'd come back again.
You're joking.
Long way to go.
Turn the plane around, pilot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is a commercial jet, so yeah, exactly. You haven't misunderstood what's going on.
I think he actually had to land in Heathrow. I think he said something like he got a load more clothes and belongings and let it go back again.
I mean, you would be delighted on one level, but on another level, you're mentally preparing yourself an extended
Probably
summer
got
break.
Plans with your mates.
Although you would shelve them, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's true. At least this summer, they haven't got too far to travel, have they? So.
True enough. In that 26-player squad, are we going to see an extra goalkeeper?
I don't think it's named, is it? I don't think, because do you remember the North Korean team tried to pick a striker?
Yep.
And they got admonished for it. And it was, I don't know if it meant they changed the regulations, but I know that for sure now you have to have a nominated keeper situation.
That's right.
And it can't be seen as just a regular player's position.
Yeah. So Phil Jagielka's not getting in, is what you're
saying. Sadly not, I don't think.
So who do you think is going to benefit then from this? Because we tried to pick our previous squad, which we put out on Twitter, as I say, a number of weeks ago, on who we think, and we left out Grealish because we thought he might be injured.
Yeah.
But let's just talk about everyone's fit and not worry at this stage too much about the injuries. So we think Grealish would probably be in it. I mean, even if it was 23 and he was fit, we think he would probably be in it. But the players who you think may have missed out on a 23 but could get in a 26.
Mm.
Any players leap to mind?
Well, I think you. Well, it does. It get quite clearly and obviously it gives you options. I think it's beneficial for England because for the first time since I've been old enough to remember, I don't think there's been so much debate around the players that we would take just because we've got so many options now. Mm. And so it's come at a good time for England. Now, of course, it's a benefit to every single team that's qualified for all the obvious reasons. But actually, it is by definition more beneficial to the bigger nations because the small nations don't have the depth of players. So we remember the thing with Northern Ireland in Euro 2016 when they were only picking from almost like a comically small pool of players anyway. So an extra three for them may not have been as much of a benefit. Mm-hmm. For England here, it clearly is a benefit because you've got players that are on the fringes, players like who are good players and they're versatile players, some of them like Bukayo Saka, who's at the time of recording is just putting another good performance for Arsenal and has played in a variety of positions and he's 19, so he's super energetic and he's quick and all that kind of stuff. You want to make a difference potentially in a tournament, so he could absolutely benefit.
And some people may well have him in their 23 anyway.
They may do.
But
I think that would be a stretch though.
Could be.
At this point.
Especially with Chilwell and Shaw having strong seasons as well down that left side. I know he's a different player to them, but you know.
But it's certainly come at a good time for a player like him because it's a much more interesting conversation for 26 players than it is for 23, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got players like him. You've got James Ward-Prowse who's on the edge, who you think will probably go anyway.
Well, he was meant to start against Poland apparently when they won 2-1 at home. That's according to Calvin Phillips.
Yeah.
So you would suspect if he was due to start that game and he played against, was it Albania? They won 2-0 away. Mm-hmm. He came on in that game. So I think that he would be one of those players that some people wouldn't choose for a 23. Other players, I'm not sure. 26 could stretch to him.
Yeah. And then the other
bring him off for free kicks, maybe.
Yeah, right. The other thing for me is I personally think it's interesting around forward players because we talked about this, I think, the week before last, or maybe even a bit last week. I think it was last week when Harry Kane picked up, at the time of recording, was still injured. The interesting debate around what you do if you don't have Kane. And we talked about players going beyond him and how he drops deep and all the rest of it. Southgate may well not just pick Kieran Trippier as another right back.
Get them all in.
Yeah, he may decide that he wants to pick a slightly different out-and-out striker to Dominic Calvert-Lewin, for example, in which case I know Danny Ings has picked up another injury, but you've got Ollie Watkins who he's used before. Mm-hmm. And there might be one or two other options. I think probably it's going to be difficult for Tammy Abraham now, who's played so little football. But
I mean, it'd be mad if indeed he did go for another third out-and-out striker.
He likes Abraham. You tell me quite a lot that he likes players, certain players that he can trust.
He does, he does. But having played such little football this year, I just, even for Southgate, even if he really liked him and he's tried to bring him through and give him opportunities, I don't think he can pick Tammy Abraham.
And I think that to move away from the forwards as well for a bit, I think you also need to look at the situation at centre-back, because it's obvious, really, despite what we've said about Stones, it's obvious, really, that he's going to pick Maguire and Stones to start the game. All things being equal, they're going to be the centre-backs.
England's best two centre-halves.
Quite. But over and above that, if Stones picks up an injury or, you know, dare I say it, a suspension, right, in the first group goal, whatever, you've got centre-backs coming in behind them. And at the moment, you're looking at people like Connor Cody, who we've talked about, Tyron Mings, who we've talked about, and Michael Keane, who perhaps we haven't talked about as much. The fascinating situation here, and it doesn't necessarily pertain specifically to the 26-man squad, but I do think it's part of the discussion, is that the Aston Villa, i.e. Tyron Mings, and Wolves, i.e. Connor Cody, have gone off a cliff.
Yeah.
They're not playing well, those boys.
Some people say Cons has been playing better than Mings.
Quite, and the teams aren't playing well, and nor are necessarily the players within those teams that are relevant to England. At that point, you've really got to start thinking about Michael Keane, because he's performing at a higher level, both at club and individually at the moment, I would say.
You know what you're getting with Keane?
Yeah.
He's played for England a number of times, and he's got caps, and he's also a threat from set pieces as well, which is not the number one thing.
All things being equal, you're only ever going to use two centre-backs at a tournament, right?
Yeah, three at most.
Yeah.
So you think that he will just take four centre-halves? He won't use this as a chance to bring in a fifth?
Well, I don't know what he'll do. I think what we should say is that, you know, obviously we don't know what Gareth Southgate's going to do, but what we have done is we've reacted to the news about 26 players, and we've updated our squad based on improvements, news on injuries, form, and the updated and increased squad size. And we'll put that up on social media by the time this comes out, so people will be able to see that. As for what Gareth Southgate does with the news, that's a separate point. And I suppose you're much better qualified to tell us about that than I am. I imagine you think that he'll go with some more tried and trusted players, do you?
Possibly. And I'll tell you now, it wouldn't be probably... I doubt we're going to have him in our 26... player squad, and I'm not sure many would either.
You're not going to say the two words that I've banned you from saying on this podcast, are you? Is one of them begin with E and the other one begins with D?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, for goodness.
I honestly think he might take Eric Dier. I'm not saying he should, and that would be my choice, but I think he might do.
I don't see what the argument for it is, though, because he's not a good enough centre-back based on form. And he's not as good as any of the midfielders who are similar to him already in the squad.
I hope I'm wrong.
Right.
That's all. That's my suspicion.
Yeah, but to me, Marcus, it feels like if you are an England manager and you react to the news that you're getting three extra players to take to a tournament, and the first thing you think of is the Eric Dier, it doesn't bode well for what's happening in the summer.
Well, okay.
I've got no beef with Eric Dier at all, personally, or anything like that, you know.
Yeah. Is his brother you don't
know? Don't say that. I go mad.
What I would say then is, what about Jesse Lingard? Would there be room for Jesse Lingard, you know, bringing in the good vibes as we know he can? Because if it's a 26-man squad, the way Lingard has played this calendar year, he would feel very, very disappointed if he didn't make it. I understand the attacking talent that England have had that got in those places where Lingard would play out wide in a front three.
He's versatile.
Yeah, he is versatile.
And if he maintains the form he's shown... I know he drew a bit of a blank against Chelsea, but Chelsea are a good team. He scored the two goals for West Ham against Newcastle in that defeat. West Ham are going to miss out on top four now. It seems clear to me the momentum's going to be against them, which is really disappointing from their point of view. But if Lingard maintains the form he's had since he's moved to West Ham, I think there's definitely a serious argument to say that take another mid... I know Lingard's more of an attacking player, but for example, take... say another midfield player that's on the fringes like James Ward-Prowse, right? Realistically, based on what you've seen this season, who's more likely to get you something in a tournament where the margins are really fine? I would argue, if we are talking about Jesse Lingard in the same terms then in the summer as we are now, it's only a month or so away or whatever, I think you've got to argue Jesse Lingard's much better place to do something for England, and therefore you use that extra three-man space accordingly and take a bit of a gamble, maybe.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be against it myself.
Hmm.
But I think the forward position is interesting. Do you take another number nine? And if you do, Ings and probably Ollie Watkins would be one of the two. But we shall see, and we will tweet out, if we haven't already done it, our 26-man squad.
The problem with Ings is his injury issue, isn't it? I do like Ings, but I mean, Haasenhüttl was saying fairly recently that he thinks he might be out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that would be a great shame.
And the shot comes in, it's there from Ollie Watkins, who marks his international debut with a goal.
Phil Foden has been bloody excellent in recent weeks, and well, for longer than that, of course, but particularly against the likes of PSG and in the cup final and so on. You know, he's got magic in those boots of his. Surely a starter for England at the Euros.
100%.
I mean, to the point of, we always say Kane is the first name on the team sheet. I don't think that would change. He could be the second, maybe third name on that England team sheet.
I think when you talk about the best players in the world of his age, and people have traditionally talked about Haaland and Sancho and even Mbappe, who I understand is a little bit older, I don't see any reason at all why Phil Foden isn't in that conversation. I think you have to...
The way he played against Dortmund, against a couple of those players.
He's been unbelievable. And I think the most exciting thing about him is he hasn't actually reached his ceiling yet. And look, he won't... If he starts every game for England and England have a disappointing tournament, he's not by any means going to be the first world-class player, English player, to not be able to do it at international level for lots of different reasons. So, you know, let's spare him that kind of pressure. If he can replicate anything like his club form for England, look, it's not an exaggeration to say that he could be the player of the tournament. He could make the difference. He could do it. Well, he could. I mean, he's definitely got it in his locker.
I know what you mean.
There's no way you can have a discussion at this point in time about the best players in the world under 21 and not include Phil Foden.
I agree. When you say he could be the player of the tournament, that would also be dependent on some of the players playing further behind him, pulling their weight and doing their
bit. I'm not suggesting he's going to do like a Diego Maradona or whatever. But you know what? One of the things that's actually interesting about England now, and this is a bit of an obscure point, but I hope I can get it across pretty well, is that in the past, you've got a lot of big characters, a lot of big players, and although they play in different positions and are responsible for different roles for England, they all kind of want to be the main man in their own way. So if you go back to when we first started this series of shows and we talked about 2010, look at the players you've got. I know Rio Ferdinand had an injury, but if you include him, because he was at the squad for a bit, wasn't he, and he went home, Terry, Ferdinand, Lampard, Gerrard, Rooney, these massive characters, Now, they play different positions, they're doing different things, but are any of those players realistically going to have humbled themselves to say, do you know what my job is here? It's to set things up and to let someone else do their bit.
Yeah.
Right. And England now has got a much greater team spirit, we're led to believe. Everyone says it. The ex-players we've spoke to, the journalists.
That's definitely true.
Yeah, fine. So if the other relevant players can humble themselves and set Phil Foden up to be able to affect the game in ways that he's shown consistently for Man City this season, I don't know... I'm putting it this way, right? There's a lot of other factors, but I don't know if many other players in other teams that we'll play against will be able to deal with him. Mm-hmm. And that's the most exciting way I can describe it. If Foden's on his game and he's playing at 10 out of 10 and the other players are setting him up to be able to affect the game, I don't know what other players can live with him on the opposition team. I genuinely don't think anyone can. Because he can do everything. He can pick the ball up on the half turn. He can go past the player. His technique is incredible. I remember someone saying the other week, I can't remember who it was now, saying they're watching him in the warm-up for Man City, and his finishing was the best in the team. He can do all of it. So if he can get into that position where he can be enabled to do that, that other teams are going to be worried about him. And I don't know if that happens very often in the England team, because I think that a lot of other big nations in tournaments think, yeah, but it's England, it'll be fine, because they'll shit themselves or something will go wrong. And that, I don't know if they can justify saying that about someone like Phil Foden. So we should be very excited. He can also play a number of different positions, play far forward on the left, which is great if Grealish isn't going to be available, because that's Grealish's best position, in my opinion. Play a bit deeper. He can play in the middle. He can play as a false nine, which England won't play, but it's still relevant to say that he can do it. Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. What do you think about him?
Oh, you're getting me going here. I'll tell you what. Imagine if Southgate set up like Guardiola.
Yeah, just do exactly what they do. Yeah.
I agree. And I think Foden, he doesn't look like the type of chap who would let pressure get to him. But we certainly have to be careful because the media in this country, of which I think we're sort of a part of, yeah, although we try and keep on sort of a safe distance.
I'm just saying he's a good player.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you said he could be player of the tournament though. Yeah. But I do. I think he's absolutely crucial, and I think to have a player like that, I know other countries. You know, I'm sure Spain fans and whatnot will be going, oh, blimey, we've had a load of these. Well, we haven't.
Well, what we should be doing is thanking Guardiola for it, by the way.
Because, of course.
Because the conversation a year ago was like, when's he ever going to play?
Yeah. And well, you wouldn't have learned those skills at the old FA School of Excellence, would he?
No.
So, rest in peace.
He also he's just able to affect the game in all areas of the pitch, and there's not that many players can do that. Mm. You know, you don't ever really, in your head, you don't think of him giving the ball away.
Yeah.
You don't think of him being brushed off the ball easily. He's small, but he's got a really strong core strength, and he's got a good low center of gravity. He can do everything. He can do absolutely everything.
And that's where I think the humility comes in for one or two of the other players, because if Foden does play off the left, which I suspect he would do, because I think Southgate still fancies Sterling on the right side there, and if not Sterling, then maybe Sancho. And I get that. I don't think too many people would have a problem with that. But if he does play on the left, he likes to drift around, he likes to go here, there and everywhere, and you want him to be able to do that. Who's going to play the left side of a central midfield, or depending on how they line up, whether it's two in front of the back four?
Well, Rice has played there before.
Exactly. And Rice, someone like Rice or Henderson, or maybe even Bellingham, they're primed for that role of, okay, you do your stuff, but don't worry, if anything gets past you, I'll be there to kind of mop up and whatnot. Yeah. And the left back, whoever it is, Chilwell or Shaw, you would think, good seasons, good engines, and you want to get the best out of Foden.
Definitely. And I think also, I think you're absolutely right. And I think also the idea that excites me is if England play a three at the front, up front, they've got a different number of options of players they can pick. You're probably realistically already always going to pick Kane if he's fit. But the other side, you've got players who can present different challenges to other teams' defenders.
Exactly.
So if Foden or Grealish play on the left, that's a completely different challenge to playing against Sancho on the right. Or Sterling. If you switch them, there's no reason you can't switch them.
Yep.
You know, there's lots of options you can make. So going forward, if England can set themselves up and give themselves a platform to attack, then it's a very exciting thing, and Foden is a massive part.
Foden wants another one, gets another one. 4-0. Two for Foden, and it's about realistic now on the scoreline. But that was just...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, "I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit." And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes. I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This week at Sukarnov.
On the latest episode of Between the Lines with Melissa Reddy, Melissa speaks to footballer Lee Nicol, who in 2019 was hacked and had intimate footage leaked online. Lee opens up about the impact it had on her and how she came back from it.
The first mental impact, it was sheer shock. It was panic attacks. It was shame. It was guilt. I think I felt every single sense of emotion. It felt a little bit like grief, as if I had lost someone, but I hadn't lost someone. The only person I think I'd lost was myself.
Meanwhile, on the latest On the Continent on Football Ramble Presents, Dotton, Andy and Miguel Delaney unpack everything surrounding the Super League and how it has changed football forever.
When you watch a Champions League game, when you watch, say, Manchester United in Champions League, Real Madrid in Champions League, it's not just a match. It's that every single minute of the match is imbued with 7 decades of history. The Super League, which has none of that. It was getting quite sad for that we were going to lose this and have to face this monstrosity.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
Now, everybody, as you may know by now, each week we're flicking through the pages of England's recent past to understand the triumphs and failures that have shaped Southgate's side. Today, we go back to England's qualification campaign for World Cup 2018. Now, last week we left off with Iceland and Roy Hodgson standing down after that disastrous loss to the Icelandic team.
Was he hasty? Was he too hasty, Marcus?
Well, I think he was. I'm surprised he didn't do it pitch side, to be honest with you. But he was off. Poor old Roy. God bless him. And the FA were on the lookout for another manager. Martin Glenn was the man in charge of the search, despite admitting that he wasn't a football expert. Good start. let's get someone who doesn't really know what they're talking
That's
about.
That's him saying it. Admits it.
I mean, there's the sort of the...
Imagine that, I'm more of a rugby man.
Amazing. Arsene Wenger was a top target.
So they say.
Back in those days.
Who knows?
Steve Bruce was interviewed.
My God. Good Lord. Yeah.
How different it could have been. The then 38-year-old Eddie Howe was linked to the job. Alan Pardew said around the time, if it ever turned up at my doorstep, that's how it works, I would say to the FA, I'll have one tournament. Let me have one tournament, win, lose or bust, and my money ends when that ends. I'd be happy with that.
Oh, thanks,
he really
Alan.
Understands the process.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. It's not unlike Alan Pardew to make it all about him, isn't it?
We'll keep paying you after you've left the role, Alan.
Alan, have you even considered what anyone else would think of that? Nah, not really.
Just give me one tournament.
Yeah.
No, we're not giving you any. Deary me. So there were other names linked to the job as well, but none really stuck. And then on the 22nd of July 2016, Big Sam Allardyce, in his England tracksuit, was appointed England manager. He already owned that tracksuit, didn't he?
Remember the photo? Yeah, I've got my own. Marcus, before we get into Big Sam, your memory of the time...
Yeah.
When I was going back over this, and I can't quite remember how I felt at the time, because I think I did that thing that most people listening to this show would have done after England lost to Iceland, which was in the same... I mean, it was only a matter of weeks before Big Sam took over between
It was the same summer.
Yeah, and so it happened very quickly. I think I was still suffering the fallout of being pissed off about it. Mm. So I don't remember too much about it at the time, but when I look back over it, did the research... It felt to me like they just didn't really know what they wanted or what they were doing.
Yeah.
And there was no real plan, as usual, at that point. Is that roughly your kind of memory of it as well?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, it's a difficult one in international football, of course. But, you know, the idea is that's why the under-21 manager position can be an interesting one if you want to kind of nudge everybody up one, if you see what I mean. But that is obviously a huge gamble, and we haven't really seen the likes of that before in this country. And it is tricky. Like, who do you get in for an international managerial appointment? Because inevitably they are sort of parachuted in, I suppose. Mm. And because,
well, unless you do it a German way, like you go
with Yogi Love,
yeah. Well, you work, and you've got the assistant who goes through afterwards and all the rest of it.
Well, that, exactly, yeah. But I mean, seldom does that really happen for most sides. You know, I mean, the Germans, you know, they've done things very, very well indeed. But Allardyce wanted the job. You know, he was unashamedly open about that. And that, I think that's fair, actually. I wouldn't hold any of that against him, of course.
No.
And to be fair, I was pleased for him. You know, when he had that massive grin on his face when he was wearing the tracksuit, I did think to myself, I think this is the best of a bad bunch, I suppose, or a realistic bunch.
I think there's definitely an element where you'd be churlish and a little bit petty if you weren't to look at a person who had worked really hard all their career to get to this point, which is naturally the apex of a managerial career if you're English, you know, for 99% of people. And I think you'd be, you know, a little bit petty if you were to begrudge him it, because regardless of the paucity of other options, if you want to go down that road, it was still, he'd given the job on merit.
Again, you think about it at the time, England had just lost to Iceland.
Yeah.
They'd had a really bad campaign, and the previous World Cup, they'd gone out in the first round. So it wasn't as if, oh, well, hang on, can he manage these players? Can he? You know, Hodgson was a similar type of manager, never really managed a big club in England, Liverpool, as in he'd never established himself as a top four or top six kind of manager. In fact, and I don't think any English manager has really. Harry Redknapp,
I don't think you'll get in trouble from Liverpool fans. I think they'll want to forget that.
I'm sure. I just wanted to make the point that Liverpool are a big club, for crying out loud. But again, I think they've made that point without me having to. Allardyce, you know, as you say, has worked hard. And I thought to myself, Allardyce, maybe at tournaments, you'd expect England to qualify for tournaments. Sometimes against better opposition, we'd seen his sides be a little bit frustrating for better teams to play against. So I thought, well, actually, if he brought that to England, that's where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that might be it. But of course, 67 days later, you know, we know what happened in Wings Restaurant. He was recorded saying certain things and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
and he was gone on 6-7 days later. He left the job.
And by that same token, we talk about the road he took to the apex of his career, and he was totally in control of that, and he deserves the credit for getting there. But he also deserves the blame for coming out of that.
Well, this is it.
So soon after, on him as well.
It is on him, and you know that he had one game in charge. England, a 1-0 win away to Slovakia. Obviously, they'd drawn with Slovakia in the Euros, and it was a very, very late injury time winner.
But England were poor in that game.
From Adam Lallana, they were poor, and I would have been. Just for kind of intrigue's sake, I would have been interested to see what Allardyce would have done with the side and how he would have motivated them. But I fear that his kind of maybe more old school methods, I don't know. I mean, he certainly does instill a bit of confidence in players. We know that with sides who he's helped get out of relegation scraps and so on. But I just wonder for some of the top talent in England when they're playing for Manchester United, Manchester City, Arsenal, Spurs, all the teams who were in the ESL, you know, all that kind of stuff. I just wonder if it would have worked.
On reflection, it was a silly thing to do, but just to let everybody know, I sort of helped out what was somebody I'd known for 30 years, and unfortunately it was an error in judgment on my behalf, and I paid the consequences.
I think you can make quite an interesting comparison with Sam Allardyce and the manager that followed him, which I know we're going to come on to. By looking at it through the lens of Wayne Rooney. Now, Big Sam lost his job as the England manager because he made some poor decisions about how he conducted himself. Now, we don't need to go into the detail of that because he's not, at least because he's been quite litigious about it in the past, but also because he came into the job, Marcus, if you remember, £3 million a year plus bonus, talked about how it was a dream come true, all the rest of it, and then he set fire to it himself, right? Yep. So he's got to live with that. That's his punishment, whatever. But if you look through the lens of Wayne Rooney, you can tell, you can at least get a good insight into what Sam Allardyce would have been like when compared to Gareth Southgate. Gareth Southgate took a very positive decision about Wayne Rooney pretty early on in his managerial career in a difficult, what is undoubtedly a difficult situation.
Yeah.
And England have got such a cult of personality anyway with players like Rooney, Beckham,
which going all the way back to Gascoigne. Talismanic, you know, complex. That
Southgate
had.
Makes a very positive decision. I mean, I know you're going to come onto it. Mm-hmm. Big Sam didn't do that.
No.
Sam Allardyce was the manager. The game that England played when Sam Allardyce was manager, that sole game, Wayne Rooney became the most capped outfield player in England's history. Mm. Right after the game, Big Sam asked what role Wayne Rooney was playing in that game, which they put in a pretty poor performance, mm-hmm. and they only kind of got out of jail, and I think it's back down to 10 men as well. Mm. He said, "This is the most decorated outfield player in England," talking about Rooney. "It's not for me to say where he's going to play."
Yeah, there you are.
That's not really the most inspiring thing to hear
exactly.
from an England manager about a player who's coming to the end of his career.
And we'd been sort of burned with that with some of the bigger players in the past. You know, well, I've got to pick this player. I've got to pick that player.
Yeah.
So we move on to Southgate and Allardyce loses the job. Southgate was quickly called up to take charge of England's next four games, which were a few World Cup qualifiers and a friendly at home to Spain. Southgate had previously stated that while he'd liked the senior job one day, he felt he wasn't ready for it now. I mean, really, Southgate probably thought to himself, I'm enjoying the England under 21 role. I'm kind of relishing that. I'm building something there. And to be honest, we know the poison chalice that is the England managerial position. And he probably thought,
I could do without it. Yeah.
And if I do get it, maybe just let me enjoy the next couple of years, you know.
Yeah.
But roughly 2 weeks after the 2-2 draw with Spain, which England threw away a 2-0 lead, but it was a bit more encouraging, you could argue, Southgate was appointed England manager. And essentially the FA, having scrambled around for so many years trying to find somebody and you know, obviously landed on Allardyce, albeit for a short while, basically gave the job to a man who didn't really want the job.
Yeah.
Seemed to be a new approach, but it was an interesting one nonetheless.
Well, spoiler alert, he's still in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At the time of recording. No, he's still Jordan Henderson said of it, the manager has been brilliant. The players have got on really well with him. He gives responsibility to the players and he listens. Mm. Now, I understand players are going to, they're not going to go, well, that's a bit of an underwhelming appointment. But that quote is interesting, though.
If you're a football fan, you should be absolutely cynical about players giving quotes like that about managers they're playing under. Mm-hmm. There's always an agenda for it. But in this case, I think you can probably say, well, look what's come along after that.
Yeah.
Look at all the other evidence and associate it together and see that actually that does appear to sound pretty spot on, actually.
And do you know what? A lot of people thought Southgate was a bit mealy-mouthed and a bit weak.
He seemed, I don't know if it was mealy-mouthed, Mark.
Not mealy-mouthed, sorry.
He felt a little bit like he didn't necessarily have the steel that we assume was needed.
Okay, yeah. I actually liked Southgate straight away. I know it's easy to say with hindsight. Go back and listen to the old recordings. Mm. But he was
a bit
very
boring weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, we're very boring. Yeah, goodness knows. Still a pandemic, I suppose. But he was very realistic when talking to the media, very open and honest, and quite wise. The way he spoke about England, and I just thought he gets it. Mm. Whereas previous managers, right? I'm here now. Mm. I'll sort this out, and I'm going to do this, and which is what we saw with Capello, a little bit with Allardyce, and I thought with Southgate, I thought, he gets this and he's really going to have a think about this. And really, it's a free hit for him. No one was really touting him for the job that much, certainly not the public. And as we say, he seemed to be the only person on hand who would take a massive wage, well, not a wage cut, but he wouldn't be on the vast sums that Capello was on and so on and so forth. So, you know, they got the job done going to Russia. They qualified in a fairly straightforward group. I mean, nearly lost to Scotland, but just got about scraped a draw there. Mm. They didn't score too many goals, actually. It was quite an unimpressive campaign. You know, we spoke about Euro 2016, where England were top scorers and all that kind of stuff. This was, you know, home would get wins against Malta with 2-0 and so on. It wasn't great. But Southgate started to bring in some younger, fresher faces. I mean, Trippier got his first call-up when he was, what, about roughly 26 years old, which is an interesting one. Daniel Sturridge was one of England's starting players at the start of the campaign. His star started to wane a bit. He's talking of Wayne's. Rooney had gone by this point. And we get to the series of friendlies that led up to the World Cup 2018. And that's when Southgate started to come into his own as a manager. That's when you really started to see what he was made of. As I say, the qualifying campaign, it was a case of, let's just get this done. Mm. And when you get to the friendlies, you have two games in November 2017 at home to Germany and Brazil. He played a 3-5-2 and really used them to work on England's defence. I was at the Brazil game. There was a very little attacking intent
from
England.
I was there as well.
Yeah, and it was against better sides, and it was right. And for an England manager to do that, it was almost as if he thought, I don't really care what you're going to say about me, because what can you say about me? And I'm going to use these games and then he would again in months later to do what I bloody well think.
Mm. Yeah, it felt like a process.
Yes.
And I think that's what really sets it apart from what came before. Because he started, to me at least, look like he was using friendlies the same way other joined up nations think about friendlies, i.e. not just a vehicle to raise your hopes ahead of a tournament, but to actually say, do you know what? What I want to do is put us in a position here. Mm. What would happen if, okay, so now we're, I don't know that this didn't happen, but for example, but So we're 1-0 down against a big nation, right? And it's not a friendly, actually. Mm. It's a tournament knockout game. What are we going to do? What patterns of play are we adopting? What tactics are we going to go into? Where's our focus?
Yes.
How are we going to meet these challenges? And how can we at least do a dress rehearsal for them? That's what it felt like to me. And you're right to say that in his own way, because he's obviously a very nice man and a very polite man, he just didn't care what people were saying about him. And this is before, don't forget, he had the kind of the positive summer that he went on to have, where he's now, he's not untouchable, obviously, but he's certainly got a lot more credit in the bank now. So it's actually quite a brave thing to do at that point.
Well, it was, and I think that sort of drawn out approach, actually trying to think about this stuff rather than, well, this will be the team, you know, we've got some big stars, and if we're struggling, we'll bring on the pacey bloke off the bench and they'll run at them and all this kind of stuff. And started playing a 3-5-2. In March 2018, England won 1-0 against the Netherlands. Jesse Lingard scored his first international goal. We saw Jordan Pickford come into the side, started to become a character of that England side and would be at the summer. Whatever one thinks of Pickford now, he certainly played his part in this early development of Southgate's World Cup side.
Marcus, up until very, very recently, it was very difficult to complain about Pickford in an England shirt.
Well, completely. And you saw Pickford's distribution, playing the ball out from the back against the Netherlands. There was a few nervy moments, but Southgate said, no, this is what I want. We have to try, because if we just go and prepare over the cracks like we always do, this is how it's going to work out. And this from the BBC Match Report of that game. Southgate's team selection raised eyebrows in a defensive context, particularly his use of Walker in a three-man defence rather than his accustomed right-back position. It worked for England at the World Cup. I understand you could say the goal of Croatia in semi-final and so on.
Also, Marcus, at this point, you need to give credit to Steve Holland.
Yes.
Who everyone says is one of the best coaches around. A lot of players say that he's the best tactical coach and just straight.
He's definitely
played
his part.
They play under. I think they seem to be a great combination. Southgate doing the kind of man management, the kind of... the face-to-face stuff and Holland being the real brains and on the coaching side seems to work as a nice combination. And the reason I say that, by the way, is because I wouldn't be surprised at all if the idea to have Kyle Walker there, because people talked about how Southgate played like that under Venables in the Euro 96, which of course he did. And I imagine, though...
That was more of a back four, though. Usually it was a back four in Euro 96. There was times where there was a bit of a tinker, but that's...
I think I'm right in saying that Venables did... For England,
he did, yeah. He.
Did he not use Stuart Pearce there?
Well, I mean, Venables influenced Steve McClaren for that ill-fated game away in Croatia when they played 3-5-2. And it was a very unpopular decision to make.
The point I was just going to make is that Southgate, that people were making the link at the time between playing Walker in a back three as a fullback, and so that Southgate experienced that when he played. But I wouldn't be surprised if Holland was the guy who did the detail on that.
Yeah, exactly. And England played six friendlies leading up to that World Cup. They played a back three in all of them. And this is where we see John Stones starting as well. This is where the players that are playing now are really beginning to take shape in Southgate's side, and he's building it. And really, he was the first England manager to properly go for a back three since Glenn Hoddle in 1998. And in this country, despite Antonio Conte and one or two others playing with back threes, some aplomb and so on, it was seen as, what on earth are you doing? But again, that kind of free hit he had, he thought, no, I'm going to bloody well do this my way. And we need a back three because we're a bit dodgy at the back. It will give us defensive stability. It will give us something to build on. And it all was very, very interesting going into the World Cup. But it also helped lower expectations because people didn't think much of the system. They didn't think much of Southgate. And they thought, well, you know, we get out of the group and then we'll see how we get on. And we'll talk about World Cup 2018 next week.
Look forward to it.
Very much so. Thank you very much for listening to Lions Watch, everybody. We'll be back next week with more news and discussion and a return to that World Cup in 2018, the Summer of Love.
And waistcoats.
See you then.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.